Good afternoon, and welcome to our meeting. It is 1:30 on October 2nd, 2023. And time to reconvene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Water Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Wolf, President of the Commission. We have with us today Commissioner Sid Logan, Vice President, Commissioner Tony Olson, Secretary, John Harlow, CEO, General Manager, Joe Fino, Acting General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commissioner and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jen Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stoltzman, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please turn off or mute your cell phones or other electronic devices. Copies of the agenda are located on the Deputy Clerk's table near the entrance. Are any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda?
Yes, Commissioner, at places we have item 6B. We're adding it at places amended schedule 20, BPA retail rate increase.
Thank you. Comments from the public is item 3 on the agenda. And that is when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. And persons shall be recognized to speak from the sign-up cards located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. If you're joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial *9 by phone. Attendees will be called on to speak at the appropriate time. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state and spell your name, and indicate where you are from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners, not the audience. If you have documents or other materials to enter into the record, hand them to the deputy clerk, who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second on the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. We'll now have the flags salute, and I ask you to rise and join me. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
For October, we have a rather outstanding, a very outstanding employee to honor. Our employee for the month of October is Sarah Mayo.
Is that her hiding behind hiding?
I didn't ask. Is it Mayo or is Mayo?
It's Mayo. Okay. It's Mayo.
So I'll introduce Bob Anderson, who will introduce Sarah.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Bob Anderson, the manager of Substation Engineering. I have the pleasure of telling you a little bit about Sarah Mayo, our October Employee of the Month. Sarah's here with her husband, Collier, and she has a large family who reside in the Tri-Cities area, and some of them should be online today. Sarah is an electrical engineer, and if you couldn't tell, also a Wazoo graduate. While she's only been at the district for 6 years, five of those in substation engineering, she's already had a big impact on our team and one of our technical leaders. She started out in substation engineering as a design engineer and earned sequential promotions to her current position as professional engineer after receiving her PE license. Sarah typically works on our larger substation projects like the newer Twin Cities substation, the Sky Valley switching station, and the Camino substation rebuild, which is in the design phase right now. Sarah is also our project lead for both the new Crosswind substation, which will connect to the new energy storage system, and also the project lead for the system reliability program. And she also oversees and approves other engineers' drawings. Sarah was assigned to these projects and responsibilities because of her excellent technical skills, her attention to detail, and her outstanding work ethic. She was nominated for Employee of the Month by a teammate based on her exceptional job performance, outstanding service, and innovation. And some examples that were included in her nomination include her dealing with supply chain issues and being able to keep her projects on track and routinely taking on additional responsibilities while juggling multiple projects without skipping a beat. He also goes on to say, Sarah goes above and beyond when assisting others. Her communication is often very thorough and tactical, and Sarah's knowledge of how things are done from an electrical design perspective is admirable, and she is often the go-to source for other engineers on our team. She is highly respected by both substation engineering and substation construction. Sarah has played a key role in developing improved substation processes and designs, including revising outdated design and construction standards. Doesn't matter how busy she is handling big projects, she will always lend a hand to assist the department as a whole or help out a colleague. I also received comments from Rob Peterson. He's one of our substation construction foremen, and he worked with Sarah on the Sky Valley project. He mentioned she did an excellent job as project manager, coordinating with all the players, including substation construction, the Energy Control Center, and SCADA engineering, and many others, helping to keep the project on track. She provided great support to the crew during construction and made multiple site visits to see how things were going and answer questions. And he says, her drawings were of an outstanding quality. She's an excellent team player and easy to deal with. And she also did a great job following up on missing parts due to the supply chain issues. I also reached out to Jeannie Harshbarger. She's a manager of our planning and protection group, and she said a lot of nice things, including this. Sarah consistently makes time to answer questions about substation engineering, can often be found collaborating with others to ensure high quality of drawings through peer review, and has an unfailingly great attitude about helping in whatever way possible. This Employee of the Month award is well deserved. So in summary, Sarah's an excellent engineer, teammate, and district employee, and an outstanding choice for Employee of the Month. Congratulations, Sarah.
Come on, honey, you gotta come up here. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Sam.
You can't have this yet.
Okay.
Hey. So you're a cougar.
I am.
All right.
Well, you know, that's kind of iffy.
Oh, yeah. You should be over here.
I'm in the middle?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're the star.
Yes. Congrats.
Thank you.
So I'll begin by giving you this plaque that you can add to all of your others. I'm sure your former professors would be very proud of you, and we are too.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was wondering, later I can ask you this, but mm-hmm. I was wondering, how is substation engineering different from other kinds of engineering? But a short answer.
We're applications engineers. We're buying all sorts of different equipment, trying to get it all put together in one spot and making it work with each other. Kind of where all the power lines come in. It's the central hub, so.
Pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Me? Well, I have for you, dear. Where do you have the emblem? Oh, that'd be a cool sweatshirt. We'll
Thank
let you,
you
put all this stuff down.
Is that okay. A cool sweatshirt?
It's a pat to mention that again. No, I love the kooks. HPE, huh?
Mm-hmm.
How's up, dear?
Yeah.
With a toughie.
Thank you.
Yes.
And good work. And on the standards, you said that. You noticed that you upgraded substation construction standards, or?
Well, a lot of them were outdated when I started on.
That's my question, outdated?
I don't know, 2000s, early 2000s. So,
wow.
We're always,
kudos to
we're
you.
Always trying to do better.
Yeah, I know.
watch
those.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a glamour photo. You're probably too young to know.
Oh.
From the glamour photo creative nation, came and went. So here's your glamour photo. First of all, congratulations on your PE. That's
yeah.
Huge. You know, it sounds like not only you're a great engineer and an amazing employee, but a huge, amazing, popular member. And that is really important and can be a challenge for engineers sometimes. So that's wonderful. That's what makes it all work. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Where is your workstation?
It's in the operations center.
Oh, huh?
First floor.
She's a saint, isn't she?
As I was reading.
All of you that work on the first floor.
as I was reading all of the wonderful comments about
mm-hmm.
you, I was reminded of our what we call diversity, equity, and inclusion, mm-hmm. where people are welcomed and feel valued.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you are very valued.
Yeah.
So we thank you.
Thank you.
And keep up the good work.
Did your husband, do you want to take a picture or anything?
Yeah, I can just have it.
Want a picture of that?
Sure, you'll have some.
I'm really going to invite myself.
Oh, well, yes. Okay. Who else can take a picture? Because he certainly should be up here. You know, a lot of my teammates are here today.
Could we have them just raise their hands? Teammates. Oh my gosh. Thank you for being here.
I thought you guys were all here for a commission meeting.
Do you want all of us? Do you want
yeah.
all?
Okay, get your, sure.
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can Photoshop us out later.
I'm cheating.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. John Allison. Like
that was great. Thank all of you for being here. Now we are going to recognize our newest certified municipal clerk of accomplishment, Cindy Rich.
So I'm waiting for your exiting.
Okay,
wait a minute.
Go ahead, we'll wait. Just know that we have Jenny Rich here. So I will introduce Melissa Collins, who will then introduce Jenny Rich, our newest certified municipal clerk.
Just want to wave.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm pleased to announce that Jenny Rich, our deputy clerk, has successfully achieved her certified municipal clerk's designation from the International Institute of Municipal Clerks.
Excuse me.
The Certified Municipal Clerk Program is designed to enhance the job performance of the clerk. To earn this designation, Jenny had to attain 120 hours of extensive education programs and have pertinent experience. To get a perspective on this accomplishment, the International Institute of Municipal Clerks has 14,586 members from around the world. 4,513 have earned their certification. Washington State has 368 members and only 185 of them have their municipal clerk's designation. Jenny began this process back in 2021, whatever that was, and was presented with her certificate of completion this July 2023. This is quite an accomplishment and I'm very proud of you, Jenny. Congratulations.
All of our clerks are fabulous, and I especially appreciate Jenny's all the work she did to get this certification. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations to your elite group now.
We'll now hear from the public. We have comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on the agenda? We do have one in our audience today, Mr. Keeler, Stephen Keeler. Would you like to join us and give us your comments, please, Mr. Keeler? And welcome back from being sick and getting well, and welcome back home.
Thank you. Commissioners, my name is Stephen Keeler, K-E-E-L-E-R. I'm a resident of Edmonds. I've given you several documents, kind of a small package. I'll talk briefly, very briefly, to get it all in. The top item is a single page announcement from Microsoft. They're looking for a principal program manager for nuclear technology. The first sentence of the third paragraph pretty much says it all. This senior position is tasked with leading the technical assessment for the integration of small modular reactors and microreactors to power the data centers that Microsoft Cloud and AI reside on. Interesting development worth following. The next sheet is a one-page sheet. It's the charter sheet for something called Gen 4, International Forum. This is a website that's very interesting to explore. If you pull down the technology tab, you can see the four or five fields on fourth generation reactor research. Learn an awful lot about it. I would suggest you keep this as a resource. The next two stapled items are related. The important one is the top. From the U.S. Department of Energy, Idaho Operations Office. It's the final environmental assessment for the MCR reactor experiment project. This is a four-page document which briefly lays out the technical characteristics of a small thermal-only reactor to be built at the Idaho site. It's worth reading so you can get a technical background. The takeaway is 3.14 on the final page. I won't read it, but it'll help you understand. And then going with it is the next staple packet titled Nuclear for a Changing Energy Sector. This is from TerraPower, and it also gives you background on their small modular reactor molten salt concept. And this is an interesting read also. I'm working now with the Idaho National Lab and TerraPower to get an update on actual construction starting for this thermal-only demonstration reactor, and I'll update you. Next, you have a staple press release from Terrestrial Energy, work going on underway in Canada, again on a molten salt reactor, for you to read at your convenience. Finally, next is a press release from several Korea technology conglomerates on working together to develop a molten salt reactor concept and bring it into construction for coming online in the future. A one-page handout from a company called Terrios. I'm not familiar with them. They're working with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, on a concept for a molten salt reactor, and they're a California-based company. Finally, in the package is a stapled handout from Westinghouse. This isn't the Westinghouse that I grew up with. Westinghouse was a huge nuclear long time ago. I'm ashamed to admit it, but they've morphed several times. There's a new Westinghouse, and they have a strong interest in a microreactor, the kind of technology that Microsoft itself is interested in. And this will allow you to read what they're thinking and what they're doing on this concept at this time. That's all I have. Thank you, Commissioner.
Well, we are very grateful to you. I think you're our most engaged member of the public on all kinds of new developments. Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there any other public comments, either online or?
There's none.
Okay. Great. We'll move on to the consent agenda, and we will be voting to approve the minutes for the regular meeting of September 19, 2023. Bid awards, professional services contracts, and amendments. And consideration of the certification, ratification, and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Comments about the consent? The consent.
Let me get there.
Sure.
There's none from the public. No comments.
No comments from me.
This should not be taken as an indication that I don't support the award. However, I'm back on 28 MVA transformer. I just have a general question. I know that you briefed us on the issues that you have with bidding this, but it didn't state that they met our requirements except for experience, and I was just curious what that meant.
This time I'm going to call Sanjeev and insist that
he
explain this.
But I, by, well, while you're there too, didn't you say that this is a delivery of one a year?
I believe the first delivery is for two and then three in subsequent years. So two in the first 2 years.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Sanjeev from Active Engineering Competition. So what we've been doing, we are very careful in specifying our experience environments. So last bit, there were hardly any people who went back because of supply chain. And also, then we lowered our experience requirements again. So we had a similar issue. We had some beginners came in too, but they still had experience requirement issues. So we kind of lowered it down to 7 years in the United States for electrical utilities. So these people have like 5 year experience. Mm-hmm. But Hyundai company has by itself has 30 plus years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this particular factory does not have that. So, but I reached out to other people and see how they are and all that.
Okay.
Actually, I remember that 18 years ago, this particular factory was in construction, and I was in Korea at that time.
Okay.
So, yeah, we are pretty, I think, given the circumstances, I think it's...
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so.
We need it,
yes.
And
yes.
It's scarce. So I just that stood out to me, but they have you got lowered it to 5 years, right?
Yeah, actually, in our specification we had 7 years.
Yeah.
But now they only have 5 years.
Yeah.
So they did not meet the requirement. That's why we rejected
okay.
our permit last time. So what we are asking permission to allow us to lower this to 5 years.
5 years.
And move it up.
And no other significant. Changes from the spec?
No, they met all the requirements. We had few technical questions. They clarified it, and I understand from purchasing terms and condition issues and things like that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. What's the tax amount? I know this is $7,370,000.
So, I don't know tax. We don't pay tax.
This does not include the tax. Would it be about 10%?
10%. Correct. Yes.
Thank you.
Yep.
I thank you.
Thank you very much. Sorry to harp on this one.
Well, I think it's always good to have more information. It doesn't hurt. And do you have any other questions?
No.
Do you have any?
I have no questions.
Okay, then neither do I. So I'll call for a vote. If you're in favor, please vote aye. If opposed, please vote nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. We'll move on to a public hearing. To open the 2024 proposed budget hearing. I'll now convene a public hearing on the 2024 proposed budget. I'll introduce Scott Jones, who will introduce the presentation and discussion. Mr. Jones, you're on.
Sorry, I was distracted for a second. Hello again. Sarah Bond's going to give the presentation that you've got in your report. I want to make a few comments. I'm going to take the podium prerogative and make one very quick comment about something Mr. Keeler said, which is really important. I have a dear friend of mine who's the economic development director in Georgia for Public Power. And I saw him this weekend. He was talking about data centers moving in. And you heard Mr. Keeler mention that very first item about Microsoft hiring a nuclear engineer to project manage resources. There are data centers that are looking in the state of Georgia right now that are 100 megawatts or more.
Yeah.
That's how big these things are. And some of them are talking about data centers that are 200 and 300 megawatts down the road. The utilities can't serve it. So imagine a world in the next 5 or 10 years where these technology companies are going to have to come up with their own energy resources because the utilities aren't moving at a pace fast enough. I just had this conversation with them on Saturday, and they're dealing with this issue right now, where the data centers are coming in saying, we want to move in, but the utilities can give them 50 megawatts and they need 150 or 100. It's a real issue. So compliments to Mr. Keeler for finding that one. That's a very interesting find. budget. So, deep breaths.
I took tranquilizer.
We wanted to slip something in your water this morning. I'll leave the heavy lifting to Sarah for the bulk of the presentation, but let me mention a few things. You've heard us talk a lot about supply chain. In fact, we had a presentation on a supply chain, Clark and Mark Owens and others. Just last month, we've talked about market pressures. You heard it from the IRP this morning, and Commissioner Logan, you talked about how the goal here is to protect ourselves from the market on a long-term basis, but we do have market exposure. We felt it late last year and into the spring. That's a real issue. Labor pressures, not really just wages, but even just finding people, the inefficiencies that creates. So both in 2023, and I want to give a lot of compliments to a lot of folks that worked really hard in 23 to respond to some pretty serious budget challenges that we had early this year. That translated into similar challenges for the 2024 year. We generally gather information early summer, spring and early summer. And from that point forward until now, the amount of work that's been done to try to get a preliminary budget in front of you that looks the way it does has been remarkable. And I want to give a shout out to a few folks in a second, but you've heard me say since I've been here that we focus on kind of the big three things, right? It's debt management, it's rate strategies, it's cost management. We don't have a good way to use debt next year. There's a variety of reasons for that. There's a lot of the big projects are already debt funded. We've got the money, we're waiting to spend it. A lot of the projects that we're looking at aren't really susceptible to debt funding. You don't want to borrow for 20 years for something that might be a 5 or 10 year asset. So we don't see debt as a good strategy for next year. We've got it as a placeholder in a couple of years in the out years for the forecast. You'll see that later this year. There is a rate increase proposed. We had a 2% placeholder for the next 5 years in the forecast. This one is bumped up to 3.8%. We're doing everything we can to keep those proposed rate increases below inflation. That's my goal. Our goal is to, if we're going to do small incremental rate increases, let's try to keep them at or below the pace of inflation. And that is well below the pace of inflation still. Let me talk for a second about cost containment. The difference between the preliminary information that came in at the beginning of the summer and now is probably about $70 to $75 million. That's the magnitude of dollars we're talking about. And I can't give enough credit to Sarah and Andrea, for starters. You'll hear from Sarah in a second, but they've been working their tails off this summer trying to manage our way through all this. But we've got everybody in the company, divisions and department leaders, who worked really hard to try to belt tighten to get us to where we are now. In particular, Jason and Christy and Pam and Guy Payne, who's not here today, they manage the largest budget. And poor Guy Payne, light a prayer candle for Guy and all of his folks, because they have worked their tails off to reforecast all of that work that's been done in distribution and engineering over the next several years. It is a huge lift for them, and they did wonderful work. So many thanks to them. Sarah's going to show you where we are preliminarily. I'll go ahead and tell you now. We're going to be watching it very closely over the next 30 to 45 days. We're going to be watching operating reserves very closely to see what we can do to adjust between now and then. Now and the time you're going to see a final budget. But there's a tremendous amount of work that's been done. And so I can't give enough of a compliment and a shout out to a lot of folks, but it's much appreciated. There's a lot more work to be done over the next couple months. We'll be here, planned to be here at the beginning of December for a final budget approval. That's the goal. And we've got that second meeting in December if we need it, but we don't need it. But between now and then, we'll be kind of looking pretty hard at all of these things that you're gonna see today to see where we can make some improvements. Any preliminary questions before I hand it over to Sarah?
So yeah. I don't think we've seen the new salary schedules and the amounts you know, that will be associated with different jobs. So how are you going to, when will you know about all of that?
So to be blunt, we have it layered into the 2024 budget. I will tell you right now, from my perspective, that is necessary. And I know that it's a decision you all need to get your heads around, and we need to talk through that, you know, more if we need to. But the direction we're headed, our plan is to do all of that effective January 1, and we need it from a competitive standpoint. I mean, we are seeing more job openings because of more retirements. We're seeing, you know, job, refilling jobs is taking a little bit longer than we would like it to take. And so that's where our headspace is. We went ahead and put it into the budget.
Oh, so it's in the budget.
Yeah. Sorry. I heard you say. It's in the budget. It's absolutely in the budget. We've had a little bit of internal discussion, and I don't want to get ahead of John here. We've had a little bit of internal discussion about whether we want to layer it in or not, but I think our headspace right now is that we really want to do it because it's just kind of the right thing to do, and it matches us up with the market, and it puts us in a competitive position, which right now you could say in some positions we're not.
Well, I remember the precinct.
I don't want to step on anything you needed to say on that front.
No, I was just going to say, I remember the precinct where we landed in terms of how much we wanted to go up or what.
Right.
But I didn't know if it was in the budget.
Yeah, we did.
Good to know.
Do.
Thank you.
It is in. Any other preliminary questions before Sarah comes up? Go ahead.
No.
Well, if you got hard questions, hold them for Sarah.
We have a couple more hearings, right?
Yeah, we definitely.
I need to hear the presentation, but yeah, Altoni's got some questions. Eventually.
Let me hand it over to Sarah, who's done a lot of work in the last few months and so many comments. So.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, welcome.
Hello.
Thank you for having me to do this. Right and left. There we go. Well, we're here today to begin the first of four public hearings on the budget. Today, we're not asking for any approvals. This is just an introduction to our budget. I'll probably be reiterating a little bit of what Scott has already introduced, but as you know, this has been a very challenging budget season. This is my 17th budget and 100% the most difficult of the ones that we have been through. So it has been quite a challenge. However, as you mentioned, seeing the district come together has been absolutely fantastic. And we really do have some great people who contribute to this process. So again, we've heard all of the significant pressures we've been facing. And Scott mentioned what we use to kind of balance this budget, cost management, looking at bond proceeds and a small rate increase that will provide still a very good budget for the district. And this is just a quick slide just to remind you of some of the things that we've heard about that are impacting the budget. Supply chain issues, we hear that all the time now. And just the sheer cost and volume increase has just been very impactful to the budget alone. Of those, you've obviously heard very much about our power market volatility. That had a tremendous impact on us. Labor pipeline, we were just talking about, generation and water supply has been an issue, climate impacts causing more storms and other issues, fuel costs are going up, so there's just a lot of things that are having a negative impact on our budget.
On the fuel costs, that's to fuel our fleets, or is that what
that is? That's what we're implying, yes.
Okay, that cost. So we buy in bulk, don't we, through the state?
I believe we do, but it's still a pressure. This is a new slide this year. I just wanted to kind of just talk through a little bit of the timeline of what's happened with our reserves and especially how it impacts the budget. Obviously, when we balance the budget, the impact is very important and this is something we monitor closely. So this is the history going back a little over a year. And the orange line is where a requirement for our operating days cash on hand is. And so when we were developing the 23 budget, we were above our reserves. We had some cushion, so we were able to make decisions based on that knowledge. But if you look there, we were, you know, well above, we were close to, you know, 10 to 20 over. Things started to shift a little bit at the end of last year. We had already presented the proposed budget to you, but then we started having some storms that has a pretty big impact on our reserves. So it kind of changed a little bit of the picture for 2023. And then continued into the fall and winter, I'm sorry, the winter, when we started seeing the extreme market power costs that were hitting us. So you can see we took a really big dip in reserves after January of this year. So here we are in 2024 with a lot less cash than we thought we would have. So as Scott mentioned, we kind of banded together as a district to find ways to reprioritize projects and help solve the problem. So we've managed to keep our reserves above minimum, but not nearly where we were before. And so this budget was developed with the expectation that we're not going to be above reserves. Of course, we can't plan to go below, but just a very different environment this year developing a budget than we're used to. So how do we handle this? How do we balance the budget? You know, obviously we have our long-term financial goals that are first and foremost in our minds. We need to make sure that we can continue to provide the service to our customers that we need to provide. We want to keep our rate increases reasonable. We definitely have to worry about reserves and debt service coverage. And then we have our long-term priorities that we want to make sure we're continuing to support. So those are the things that we need to ensure that we're funding. And within that, we've got our different financial strategies. Scott, I think, has done a really good job of continuing to talk about these. Cost management, bond financing, and rates. Those are really the three triggers that we have on the budget. And so what did we do for 24? So we utilized all three of these financial strategies. As he mentioned, we did some pretty significant reductions to what was initially proposed in the budget, approximately $75 million across the district. We are using bond funds from previous debt issues that we've done. We're using about $59 million. And then, as he mentioned, we're suggesting a 3.8 rate increase next year.
I do have a question on this slide, and I know there's a lot more detail, but I just wanted to get it off my mind. The work in Ian, cost reduction is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But my guess is a large proportion of that is coming from capital and construction work, right?
That's a very large majority of it.
Because that's where the money is. And I just want to, I get queasy when we start pushing that stuff out, that it's done with the thought in mind that you don't want to create a backlog that for 1 year you're going to have to spend a lot of money to catch up, or 2 year maybe. And that worries me a lot.
Yeah. That's not the case. And it's a little bit of what I think we set unintentionally as a false expectation from the beginning of this year. Our first 4 months, as you recall, were pretty horrible. And so we had to make that $45-ish million reduction on a glide path to get us where we needed to be by the end of this year. And that was a lot of project deferrals.
Yeah, yeah.
And the expectation was, well, we're gonna just do those projects in 2024,
yeah,
along with everything else. Well, that's not the case. We don't even have the capacity or the bandwidth to be able to do those projects. So we are really keeping an eye on risk from reliability and building out our infrastructure, but it is a deferral, and we're just stretching out those outward years from a capital budgeting and work or capital project perspective.
And
we're keeping an eye on the risk.
I know, but just not to lose sight of that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I just don't, I don't want to face the monumental backlog that will cost us millions and millions of dollars to get out.
Absolutely, and as you all know, one of our key metrics is reliability, and we have a laser-like focus on that. It's prioritizing reliability projects. We have to serve loads. We got to make sure we're building out infrastructure, which is part of the cost drivers, right? Building out infrastructure to the IRP, we see the load increase over the coming years. That's going to take infrastructure to manage. So yeah, we have a keen eye on all of that.
Okay.
John, did we look at using some of our rate stabilization fund? Is this an appropriate thing, time? It seems like we had an event that qualified. I'm wondering now, as we're sitting here on the precipice of a larger rate increase and a more restrictive budget, has the team looked at that, whether that would be appropriate to?
We have talked about it, and Scott can probably talk in greater detail. I will just say, and then let Scott take it, we did talk about that. We really didn't want to go there until we had to go there
It's almost like an easy way out, and we didn't want to take an easy way out. We wanted to challenge ourselves first from a cost management and really do the due diligence on that side. But I'll let Scott talk to.
And I think, so my question then is, are we putting ourselves at some risk? I understand wanting to push ourselves to make it work. Are we bringing in some risk because we're not using that fund for its intended purpose?
I would say we're balancing that risk.
Okay.
With that in mind. And I'll also say, part of what's embedded in the budget is to hedge against the vulnerability or the risk of the vulnerable power markets, right? Holding more length and actually budgeting a little more on the power supply side, knowing that the markets are volatile. So you see that's embedded in the budgets. That's part of the cost increase, but that's also reducing our risk for having a 4-month situation like we did at the beginning of this year.
Good.
Scott, you
yeah, I about to... I think everything you said spot on. The only thing I would add was just more definitional on the reserves. Just a friendly reminder, we focus primarily on three. There's an operating reserve, which Sarah just showed. We have a debt management reserve that's got about $80 million in it. Of course you can tell us to touch it.
I would not do that.
That one, you've heard me say before that I would like to hold on to that just philosophically until we need bond funds and can't get them. That's kind of how I think about that debt management reserve. So if the market really moves away from us and rates really go up, and we can't get access to capital, that's a nice nest egg to have in case we need it. The third bucket is a contingency reserve bucket that we have. We can use it, but I think everything John said is really important. I agree with all of it. It's a discipline issue more than it is an easy way out. I think it's a great way to say it. In both of those though, if we use them under the resolutions of this governing body, we do have to replenish them over a couple of year period. And so they're not free. You'd have to actually change the resolution in order to lower those dollar amounts. But as of this moment, we could use them with your approval, but we just have to turn right around and kind of rebuild it. So John's perspective, which I think is wonderful, has been a, hey, let's go in and just get really disciplined about this. And when we did the $75 million, we did it on a risk basis. I mean, we had a high, medium, low risk. We asked everybody to look at it from that perspective. And those high risk items, we really debated a lot about putting them back in and making sure we did those things. So that was part of the discipline. Not trying to butter John up, but I agreed with what he was doing this time anyway.
And he's still weighing pretty heavily on the operations side of the house. I want to go on to another slide.
We'll
be here.
So what did we come up with? All the work that we did. So here are our proposed budgets. Always a reminder, we actually have three individual budgets here at the district, the electric generation and water system, all of which are a little bit up, both revenues and expenditures from 2023. And just a reminder, again, this is something you know, but this is, of course, there's so many pieces of work that go into this budget, the IRP, which you've been hearing about, the load forecast, the CAPD need, and all our capital planning, water system has their model that they use. So all of this is kind of here we are with these numbers. And then the next few slides are just kind of a reminder of the good things that we have in the budget. What are we doing? What are we promoting? What are we funding? So we're funding our mission. Our mission is to provide safe, environmentally stable, reliable water and electricity to all of our communities. We fund assistance. We do provide, we're budgeted about approximately $7.5 million in bill assistance for our customers as well. While this doesn't have a budget impact, we also have employees and customers who contribute to Project Pride to help our families who have needs as well. We're funding our reliability. We still have a $289 million operating and maintenance budget. And really, I'm not going to go through each of these individually, but we have a growing number of assets in our district that need to be maintained, inspected, replaced, et cetera. So there's still a very substantial amount of funding to make sure that we have a reliable and safe system. So on funding for our environment, this budget this year includes $16.4 million in energy efficiency incentives, which really help us in a lot of ways. They help our customers use less energy, lower their power bills. That also helps us on the purchase power side, and as well as there's other funding for initiatives to help minimize our environmental impact in this budget. We fund for our power. The budget this year is $390 million in purchase power. It includes our own purchase power, our own generation system, as well as our contracts that we have. The majority, as you know, comes from our Bonneville contract, which this year is about $250 million. We have our five hydroelectric projects. The total cost of those is estimated to be about $25 million in 2024. We have all of our other renewable power contracts, substantially our wind, which are budgeted at $39 million. And then our market power, which again, we were just talking about this a moment ago. There is a more conservative assumption in here. We've increased it to a $68 million budget. So we're hoping that this will help us have a little bit of an insurance policy next year.
So you increased it $68 million. Okay.
$268 million.
Oh, two.
Yeah, $260 okay. million.
Keep going, yes.
Pardon?
Okay. Go ahead. I will not continue to express my concerns.
Funding for our future, we've got $167 million capital budget this year, just to make sure that we are ready for our future energy demands and our new technologies and growth. We have our standard distribution system investments that we fund every year. These are our major projects, our substations, etc. This year, we've got about $56 million earmarked for those projects. We'll be pretty much finishing, this is supposed to be 24 down there. The 24 budget is supposed to be continuing the completion of the North County, and then, of course, the continuation of the Connect Up project in the 2024 budget.
Sarah, let me, and I apologize for interrupting, with one additional comment. I know that $75 million reduction is alarming. But one of the things that we also did was go back and trend what our O&M and capital budgets have been. And our capital spend this year, even with that $75 million, is in line. And so I think you have to keep in mind the increases in our capital and O&M spending over the years, obviously needed and justified.
But they can go up and down.
Right. And that, I know that $75 million is alarming, but if you look at it over that horizon and again, the projects and how to manage the timing of those projects and that spend, that $75 million in a reduction is not as big as it seems. It also included what I would say a little bit of a wish list, because we you know,
I hope you didn't use the wish list.
No, that's what I'm saying. We let we let folks put everything on their list of if they, you know, get all these projects done. And again, that's what that $75 million was reduced from. So it's again, I'm just trying to say that number, although it's big, it's not.
It is big, and I'm not trying to send a message, but you know, looking out farther,
yeah,
with some of the work that was planned for 2024-25, perhaps I spoke too much on the subject. I'm just concerned about over time.
Mm-hmm.
But that you keep pushing it out, keep pushing some of this stuff out.
Yeah.
Gotta do it sometime.
Oh, absolutely. And we've been very good at executing on projects,
yeah,
over the last few years. And we plan to continue to do that. And it's just making sure that we are diligent around the timing and managing the risk,
yeah,
of getting that work,
yeah,
done.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you know, for comparison, I peeped ahead at this afternoon to report that I think our CapEx for the year is supposed to be $154 million. So this is actually in 12-13. We're actually expecting to spend this year. And I have noted, and I've made comment before, that our CapEx, we
tend to come under our CapEx budget. We tend to predict more expenditure.
And some of those can be multi-year projects and.
But I've been wondering multi-year. So I'm not as concerned at that level, really. Sorry, sir. You got to do three more slides.
I'm almost there.
Aren't you sorry that you came before us?
And last but not least is our strategic plan. So we have a brand new strategic plan out there, and we have some initiatives and action plans that are out here to help directly related to these strategic priorities. And we'll talk a little bit more about those in the next presentation. Our generation system. So as you know, the electric system purchases all of the power from the generation system to serve our customers. And similar to last year, the 24 proposed budget for generation, they're focusing on their continuing long-term strategic planning for habitat stability and reliability. The O&M budget for generation systems, $8.3 million this year. And that's just, for the most part, just maintenance on all of our hydro plants. Several capital projects in the budget this year, and we'll talk more about these in the next presentation, but we have a couple of major projects. They're gonna be doing a switchyard redesign at Jackson and some work on some protective relays. So more to come on that. And last but not least, our water system. You've heard from them recently. This just kind of pulls it all together. So we just issued some new debt for the water system. We're planning on using a little bit of that next year. We have also proposed a small general rate increase to help with the same similar issues dealing with inflation, supply chain issues, and we're also going to be getting a rate increase from the city of Everett. So they have approved an 8.1% wholesale rate increase. That's going to be effective January 1, 2024. We're anticipating to use about $4 million of the bond proceeds that were just issued in 2024 to help fund some of their capital projects. They're proposing a general rate increase of 3%, which would be effective March 1st, 2024. And then a pretty substantial capital program in next year, 2024, which includes continuing of our main extension work, a new reservoir and kayak system, and then continuing on some work in the water in the Warm Beach area, and then water AMI conversion. So here are the three budgets that are proposed. You were provided a budget book as well, which also has comparisons from 23 to 24 for each of these if you're interested in looking at it. For the most part, revenues are up on all three systems, but so are expenditures. So we're seeing a lot of change from the 2023 budget. Anything else on that? So the next presentation will be focusing on the history, and we'll go into detail of all of these areas, so you can get a little more insight into some of the assumptions behind all of these numbers. So we'll have November 7th will be we'll call the big presentation. We'll probably have the majority of the presentation where we'll go over all of the detail. November 21st, we'll come to you to talk about any changes that we've seen, any amendments that we might want to propose to you, and then we'll be asking for approval on the 5th.
So I have a question about the water increase from Everett. So 8.1% increase, and we're raising ours 3%. How much is that going to hurt us?
I'm going to actually let Brandon answer that question. I think he might have a little more insight into that.
Brantwood, AGM of the Water Utility. I don't have the exact comparison, but it's not a one-for-one comparison, obviously. So water is about $4.1 million, I think, we're spending to purchase water. So that's gone up about 8.1%. It's within that. You know, we think that the 3% will cover that rate increase in our other costs. It's a portion of it. And it's not, you know, one thing that we talked about a while ago, I mean, we need to talk about as we talk about rates in the future for water, even this 3% rate increase is something similar to what the electric utility does with the BPA pass-through, where we could potentially, we try to separate that out whenever we come to the board as far as, you know, what percentage of the 3% rate increase is created by the wholesale water. and what percent is covered by, you know, our other O&M costs, supply chain issues, that sort of thing. So we will break that down when we come to you with a recommendation for the 3%.
We had talked about that a couple of years ago, I think, is do we do something similar with water as we do on electric, as Brian just said, and break out that Everett, the Everett water charge as a pass-through, and then just show the general rate increase separately. Mm-hmm. Right now, that 8.1 is embedded in the forecast at 3%.
Yeah.
So it kind of hides and protects Everett.
But it isn't a one-for-one comparison. So that's, it's not a one-for-one comparison. It's the only portion of our own.
About what percentage of our water resource is coming from Everett?
Approximately 75%.
75%. Okay.
So similar to our power for BPA, just a little bit shy.
Thank you very much.
Brent, do we participate when they have hearings on their water rate increases?
We do. We participate on the EWUC, so the Everett Water Utilities Council. So we work through some of those issues with the City of Everett. We do have at least an opinion, but we don't, you know, we don't make those decisions. That's the Everett City Council that actually makes the final determination on the rate increases. But we do have
a captive customer.
Kind of like BPA, right?
Water utilities, don't all those dollars have to stay within the water utility? I believe they can't use those funds for other things.
I believe you're right. I believe it does from a utility standpoint. But I'm not positive. So.
But I guess what I'm wondering or asking, or do we feel like when they forecast need for additional revenue, that they're applying that fairly to their retail customers and their wholesale customers like us? Do we be comfortable with that split? Because it had several years now of large rate increases.
And they normally do the rate increases. They normally do their increases in a four-year term. They actually, because of the supply chain issues, they came back last year, and I think it was supposed to be somewhere around a 3%. They bumped it to an 8.1% because of the additional costs associated with supply chain for them. So typically we get a chance, you know, every 4 years they come and they develop their rate ordinance, so we do work with them to look at the capital projects, how those are applied across the wholesale customers and the retail customers to make sure that the wholesale customers are paying their fair share. This last time was a little bit fast, and it was more overall just the impacts of, because then we're seeing the same impacts. I mean, chemicals have gone up 25 to 250%, some of the treatment chemicals. They use a lot more than we do. Cost of copper has gone up, cost of meter boxes and meters and brass fittings, everything. Just like the electric utility, we're seeing it.
I will say that's, in some sense, that's a kudos, because you go back, and Brent certainly knows this better than I, but Everett has had a consistent rate increase, and some of them very sizable. And I would say triple, if not more, almost exponentially greater than ours. And we're going through the same type of cost and supply chain issues. And again, it's a kudos to Brent and his team for cost management and trying to drive efficiencies, not just passing it through to the customer.
Brent, wasn't there, I don't know how many years ago, wasn't there a large portion of their retail water customers not paying a billing?
They've always charged their retail, it's kind of that cost of service, cost of service analysis, trying to make sure. I know that
they weren't even recording it. I mean,
So they were paying a bill, but they weren't actually metered. So there's still some of their customers that aren't metered.
Okay.
They just had to recently go through and replace all of their meters.
So we've been subsidizing them?
Well, they've still been billed. It's just been a flat rate bill. So they look at the overall cost for their running the water system, and they split it on kind of a flat basis instead of meter basis.
So it's not the green logs. And those houses have green lungs.
Well, they weren't metered. Yeah, I do that too.
I do have a story about that. I used to live in Everett. I used to rent a house in Everett, and my neighbor, we were unmetered. I actually requested a meter. I wanted a meter to go into the house that I was, even though I was renting it. It's my father-in-law, so it's okay.
But the next door neighbor, the way that they would water their yard is they would throw their hose in the middle of their yard without even a sprinkler head and let it run.
Yeah.
Constantly. And it just ran into, and it just used to make me so mad.
So their conservation problem is...
Yeah, I mean, now that they're, I think, I'm not sure if they're all metered yet, 100% metered, but I think they're really close. State actually required all water utilities to, I think it was by 2017, I think they got a little bit later than that, but all be metered, all group A water systems. That's okay. They were a little bit behind, so I think they're really close to being completely metered now.
Did your neighbor work for the Everett Water Fund?
I don't think so.
Sounds like people need to bring this to their city council.
I think, like I said, I think they're doing a lot better now, and I think they have got most of their. And I think, you know, again, that's the benefit of like AMI is showing people how much water they use and holding them accountable for it and having them pay for that, I think is the best way to.
Well, and getting nasty looks from your neighbors when you try water.
Yeah.
Well, I do think most people, overgeneralization maybe, but they take water for granted. And lived on an island for 12 years on Shaw. And
Shaw, oh, did you?
Yeah, for 12 years. And there were parts of the island that had no water. And we had really good water, but nevertheless, one of the first encounters I had in a group was, I guess I went to the kitchen to wash my hands or something. They said, we don't waste a drop. We don't waste a drop on Shaw. And, you know, so it really, for 12 years, even though we had good water, deep well, very pure, it really made an impression on me to value water. We need to, all over the world, you know. Well, anyway,
finite resource.
On the topic, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, let's see.
I'm done unless I have any further questions.
Oh, well, gee. Let's go to chapter two. I have none.
Do you have any?
No, but thank you. Just an ask. Thank you for that graphic showing our monthly fund balance. That was useful. So it'd be great if you need to see that if we go forward for the first year.
Sure.
By month, we're going to see how we think we're going to dig ourselves a little healthier, up to a little healthier spot. Not in a hole, but we're close. Thank you.
I have no further questions. But just gratitude for all of your efforts. I know you work hard, your whole team. So I would like to call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the 2024 budget.
I move the public hearing on the 2024 budget be continued to Tuesday, November the 7th, 2023 at 1:30 p.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett, Washington.
You all call for a vote. Please vote aye.
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 Aye. Okay, we're going to move to staff recommendations on new Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act, commonly known as PURPA. I'll now convene a public hearing on staff recommendations on new Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act standards. Peter Dauenhauer will introduce the presentation on PURPA and discussion.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Peter Dauenhauer, the Senior Manager of Rates, Economics, Energy Risk Management. Beg your pardon, I have a little cough left over from some weeks ago, but anyways, glad to be here talking about PURPA. And we are ready to give you a staff recommendation on the new Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act standards. I want to just acknowledge a couple of other folks that are in the room. Christina Leineweber did a lot of the work in prepping up these our recommendations. Joe Fina, Garrison Marr, Shelley Patterson were also involved. So our purpose today is to really follow our Directive 74 and provide a formal recommendation to the board about our PURPA standards are included in the Infrastructure Investments and Job Act of 2021. And as far as our agenda is to do a refresher on the process steps in the standard, review some of the evidence, make our recommendation, and then look to what the next steps are. So as far as our PURPA process here, it is defined in Directive 74 there. It started out in November 1, 2022, where there was a PURPA presentation from legal on our new PURPA standards and the commencement of the district's consideration. We started some public engagement and outreach September 5th, 2023, with an open house and public engagement. We did a commission briefing, if you recall, not too long ago on the 19th of September, and we posted the public notice on the 20th. We're here October 2nd to give our staff recommendations according to Directive 74, and we can see, looking forward, October 17th, the commission determination on this. So just a little background about PURPA, and really just focusing on the new PURPA stuff. So these are the new sections that were added. PURPA goes all the way back to 1978, if you remember some of the old presentations. But in 2021, as part of the Infrastructure Investments and Jobs Act, IIJA, which was enacted in November 15, 2021, there were some additional requirements, one on demand response, looking at policies, including appropriate rate mechanisms to promote demand response as a means for mitigating stress in the electric system during periods of high electricity demand, if they, as in us, have not already adopted such policies. Part one, part two was looking at electric vehicle charging requirements, policies in particular to promote the availability of electric vehicle charging infrastructure, improve the customer experience for vehicle charging, and to encourage third-party investments in charging infrastructure. Recap of the demand response at the district to date. We've had our residential time of day rates through a pilot. We are carrying those forward. We presented here at the commission on this. We're looking at this particular rate as the highest potential for energy cost savings, peak load shifting, and off-peak charging. Our plan is to look at opt-in participation. We know that customers need to be educated to respond to the rate effectively, and demand response can keep rates low for everyone. We also have a pilot on commercial industrial time of day. And we're exploring other additional demand response mechanisms such as residential critical peak pricing, peak time rebate programs. So some of the pilot segments that we explored in Flex Energy. And also looking into commercial and industrial last resort interruptible rates. So we got a lot in our vision that we're looking into, and have some experience under our belt as well. For electric vehicle charging at the district, we've also made some progress here. Electrification transportation plan adopted in July of 2020. We were summarizing the outcomes. We're building some community through outreach and education. Education with customers, we're optimizing grids, doing some studies to look at the impact of EVs, and taking some steps to enable some of the customer adoption through rates already. And so we're really on a journey to with our customers to understand the implications of the changing vehicle technology, and I think we're jumping on as fast as we can here. So with the background reviewed there, let's get to the recommendation from staff. So just to summarize very quickly our evidence here for demand response, specifically referring to this part of the PURPA standard. And we've got our pilot time of day rates, and we're expecting future adoption of time dynamic rates. It is really supporting demand response as a method for mitigating the high electricity demand. EV charging side, existing rate schedules, the impact studies, the public outreach and engagement are already enabling electric vehicle infrastructure. And just to note that with our public engagement, our open house, notice that we posted, as well as online form, we've had no public comments to date. Therefore, staff now recommends that the board not adopt the two new purpose standards. Reason is because we believe that adopting the new standards identified in the IJA is not in the best interest of the customer owners at this time. Not adopting the standards does not prevent the commission from acting upon them later. That's an important point. And the commission retains the flexibility to consider additional standards that might come through PURPA in the future. You know, we've seen some iterations of this, and I'm sure we'll see more of them. And so in the meantime, we can meet for those as well. The next steps would be a board vote on the resolution on October 17th, 2023. And you can for those following along, you can visit the website to learn more about PURPA. We also have some additional attachments associated with this from past presentations as listed here.
Thank you. Do we have questions?
I have none.
I have one more question. Is there any funding that this turns access off for you to adopt a standard? Are there grants to have adopted the standard?
I have a friend here, if anyone can help here. I'm not aware of that.
Yeah, this is Joe from the Commissioner. There are no, you know, grants or funds that are associated with these standards. In fact, historically, public power has been against Congress imposing these unfunded standards on us.
Thank you, that's real.
That's a really interesting point, I think, because usually when you have something like this, there are grant programs or funding programs. But as far as you know, there's nothing associated with PURPA.
Not directly. Obviously, the Department of Energy, the Auto Laws, has the many grants and other programs that I know that we've taken advantage of. Yes.
Thank you. So in the view of the staff, we're already exceeding what PURPA is suggesting that we do. So we don't need it.
We're doing work in demand response and EVs, and I think we got a good track here, and I think that's shown in the evidence that we presented here. We don't need to adopt these standards at this time.
Well, I like the fact that we're not limited if we want to come back to it, and I doubt that we will, but who knows. So.
Yeah, I think if we were in a different position, it would be a different story, but sure. I can at least say that as far as raising awareness and getting public utilities to think about some very important things that we are thinking about, I appreciate that nudge anyway.
Well, our general manager often, we're lifting above our weight, right? And I think about it that this was probably designed to encourage lots and lots of utilities to do this, those who hadn't really begun to work on it. And we have. So good for us. Thank you so much.
And just for the record, there's no comments from the public.
Oh, good. I mean, not good that there are none, but thank you. So let's see. I will call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the proposed staff recommendations.
I move the public hearing on staff recommendations on new public utility regulatory policies, act, and standards be continued to Tuesday, October 17th, 2023 at 1:30 p.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett, Washington.
I believe I need to move.
Call for a vote, yeah.
Yeah, I need to call for a vote. Please vote aye or nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, now, Public hearing and action on the disposal of surplus property, fourth quarter 2023. I'll call for a motion.
Based on staff's recommendation and that the items are no longer necessary or useful to the district, I move that those items listed on Exhibit A of disposal of surplus property, fourth quarter 2023, be declared surplus and be sold for high bid or disposed of according to policy in the fourth quarter of 2023.
Thank you. I'll now convene a public hearing on the disposal of the surplus property, fourth quarter 2023. Claudia Lazar is available to answer any questions. Do you have any questions?
I have none.
I have none.
And I have none either, so thank you anyway.
There's no question.
Nice to have you there anyway. So, hearing none, I'll call for a vote. Please vote aye or nay.
Did we not need to close the
hearing?
Oh, sorry.
We need to ask for public questions, and then we need to close the hearing.
I'm sorry. Let me go back. I saw Claudia's. Okay, are there any comments from the public regarding the surplus property?
There are not.
Mr. Olson, do you have any questions?
I have none.
Mr. Levin, do you have any questions? And I have none either. So are there any other questions or comments from the commissioners?
You're all done.
I'll close the public hearing. Please go aye.
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 Aye. Okay, moving on, consideration of a resolution amending the district's retail electric rate schedules and street lighting rate schedules to pass through Bonneville Power Administration rate increases. Call for motion.
I move approval.
Well, now convene.
What is my motion?
Remember the district retail rate. Yes, you just moved.
That was right.
That was it. I move approval.
You move approval.
All right, thank you. Okay, since the motion has been approved, I'll now convene a public hearing. Christina Leinweber will provide a presentation and answer any questions regarding the resolution. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you, commissioners. I'm Christina Leinweber, an economist in the rates department, and I will be continuing speaking on a topic which was addressed also at the last meeting in the morning session about the Bonneville Power Administration's rate increase to us and our plan to pass that through in our retail rates.
We've had a presentation on this on the 19th.
Yes, okay. Yes. So my little clicker is not working. It is not clicking me forward.
Can we go to the next slide, please?
Okay. So the purpose of this meeting is to have public comment on this BPA cost adjustment in preparation for the formal hearing and consideration by the board on the next meeting. So, it works now. Just had to get rid of the gremlin there. To review the process that we're going to be going through on this rates matter, we remind the commissioners and anyone listening that the Bonneville Power Administration conducts a rate case for us to purchase their power every 2 years. And so the last one happened this year, has it on your process, and so it happened at the end of July, which was a little bit later than it usually does. So this whole process is a little bit later than it usually is. And on September 19th, there was a commission briefing reminding everyone and showing a few high-level numbers that were available at that time. And today we're going to show you more detailed numbers on a class-by-class basis and what that would actually look like on the rates in preparation for having a resolution at the next meeting on October 17th. To bring a little history that the commission seemed to be interested in last time, back in October 2021, which is the last time we were dealing with this rate implementation question, for our residential rates was a pass-through of only about 0.5%, so it was very small. And at that time, our residential rates only consisted of an energy charge and then a minimum charge bills. The next rate change that happened after that was in April of 2022, when we had a new budget process come through and a 3% residential rate increase. And that's when we started to implement the customer charge. And then our most recent rates action was in this April, where again, once we had the 3% residential rate increase as part of the budget process and the continued phase in of that customer charge. So now we're here to this next BPA pass through. And our policy is to look at the cost impact of the BPA's change and pass that through according to the most recent cost of service analysis that we've gone through as part of the larger budget process. And once we do that, we get these class recommended rate changes. As you can see, a little bit less for the residential class, a little bit more for the commercial and industrial classes who are higher users of power, and then the lighting schedules, again, very low users of power and also off-peak users of power having the lowest suggested rate changes. Have everybody with me so far? Okay. So to look at what that actually means on the customer bill, the exact price per kilowatt hour or per month, we're suggesting for the residential rates that we divide this between the energy charge and the daily customer charge. So we're keeping that ratio the same as we already discussed and came through the cost of service process and informed our customers about implementing the customer charge. If we want to do any additional changes to rate design, we have the whole, you know, this upcoming budget process, which you already saw a preview of today, to discuss that split. So right now we're keeping it balanced in the same ratios between the energy charge and then the daily base charges. And you can see there for even for the very small daily base charge, the reason there's no little red lines there is this percentage is so small, it's less than a cent change. So you can't change less than a cent. For a average customer, you will see that customer A, which does have a little typo, if you see, we are not having an old bill and a new bill that are exactly the same. The new bill there should be 1,338, but the difference math there is correct. Of less than $20 per year, or about $1.50 per month for the average user who uses just under 1,000 kilowatt hours a month was our 2022 average. And of course that varies from year to year based on the weather conditions. Using some of the customer data we have, we also made a representative large customer who might see a $2 or $3 increase per month, and a representative smaller customer, perhaps someone who lives in an apartment, who will probably see closer to a dollar increase per month. And then for the next rates, show you the detail of what a general service customer would be. Now we do have a number industrial and commercial rates. This is a representative one here, one of the larger ones. And we're putting that in the demand charge and the energy charge, which is consistent with our historical practice. And very appropriate is this is a power cost, so we're putting it through in those power portions of the rate. And these customers do have the three-part rate with the demand charge, so we have more options there. And then the final slide shows what it would look like for some of our larger industrial customers. Again, putting it there in the demand charge and the energy charge, which is consistent with our past practice for these customers. Now, it's hard to talk about average bills for these customers because they're so varied, and you can have a lot more diversity of bills when you have the demand charge, the energy charge, and the customer charge all interacting, but I did try to choose two representative bills here from the kinds of customers that would be in these classes and some average billing determinants to give you the kind of idea that some of these customers might see. You will see that in your packet are the red lines for all of these different bills, and know, there are many schedules. We're not going to go through every line of the lighting range or something. It's very quite long, but you can see that. And there was a slight revision of the packet that was mentioned by the clerk. There was a 9 cent that has a lot of zeros, and it was accidentally typed as a 90 cent. But we caught that, and that has been corrected.
Maybe we have that at places that it will be incorporated in our pipeline.
Yes, so just making sure we are not increasing our rates 900%. No, not at all. And so that is all that I have prepared for you, unless the commission has any questions.
Christina, this is Jovina. Commissioners, I just wanted to clarify that you're also going to be voting on the resolution today along with the rate schedules. So at the previous meeting, there was a presentation already of an EPA gas due, and today's staff just expanded on that previous presentation. Nothing really new except for all the examples of the education.
Yeah, it was good.
Just in history here.
Okay, good. Right. So, are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution?
There are none.
Commissioner Olson, do you have any questions or comments?
I have none.
Just one quick question. I know we meet with our large customers on a regular basis, and sometimes we have some idea that this is coming down the pike. Do they know? Do they have some warning?
I know
they
did
prepare their budgets and stuff. But
I know I did communicate with the account representatives. I don't know if any of them are here to say how much communication they put out, but we did at least talk with the account reps, so they should be ready.
I think of schools are budget starts September 1st.
Thank you. They're at 20, right? Schools are scheduled 20.
Yeah, well, it depends on exactly what school, but yeah, that's about where they are.
Okay. And there was an outreach to them.
I do not know if there was an outreach to them particularly. I do know that Key Accounts is aware of this change coming forward.
Okay. While very small, even if you had a school budget.
Yeah, we will validate that.
Yeah, I think that
typically
the
key accounts.
The account reps talk to them, yeah. Any further questions? Okay. I have none either, other than to thank you for a very concise, very well presented presentation. So, if there are no further questions or comments, I'll close the public hearing. Call for the vote. Please vote aye or nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Moving on meeting, we'll now consider a resolution authorizing the manager of real estate services to execute an easement in favor of Snohomish County that allows the county to operate, repair, and maintain a recreational trail on a portion of the power line corridor property of the district, commonly known as a PNT right-of-way, located in Snohomish County, Washington. A call for motion.
I move approval.
We'll now convene a public hearing. Maureen Barnes is available to answer any questions and provide the prior presentation if necessary. Do we wish to have that?
I don't need a presentation.
I don't know. We were thoroughly briefed.
Yeah, we were. It was quite good. Very thorough. So, are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution?
There are not.
Commissioner Olson, do you have any questions or no hands?
Just a comment. Congratulations for getting this across the line.
Thank you.
2 months ago, I think.
Yes, that was how many years in the making?
Four.
4 years.
Yes.
Congratulations. Ooh. And that's just a little bit of your job, right?
Correct. Well, you saw a little bit more of it this morning, too.
Are there any other questions or comments from the commissioners?
I have none.
I will now close the public hearing and call for the vote. So all in favor, please vote aye. All against, all opposed, please vote nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The resolution is Now move to the CEO General Manager's report. Are there any reports, John?
Yeah, just a couple items to touch on. First off, from our Energy Services Group, they did a food bank outreach this year. They made deliveries to 12 food banks throughout the territory, covering 518 miles over 4 days. Almost 2,500 advanced power strips were distributed on almost 2,400 LED light bulbs. Inflation and rising grocery prices have meant the food banks have seen their highest numbers ever. And nearly all the food banks that we visited mentioned this year a higher client load and let us know how excited the community is to have these types of energy efficient supplies. Food bank staff were thrilled and outwardly excited. Just a couple items, other items. Customer service week kicks off this coming week on Monday. And as mentioned at the last commission meeting, the team will be celebrating the whole month of October with the theme of team service. A couple other items. I attended the WEI annual meeting in Vancouver last week, included the WEI board meeting, but more importantly, and my favorite part was the graduation of folks from the business acumen program. And we had Jeff Feinberg and Casey Hauser as this year's graduates. And they did their capstone projects, got a chance to see their capstone projects, and I will say they did each of those individually did amazing in those capstones and truly were a couple of the stars of the day. It was a lot of fun to see. I had the opportunity to meet with Rick Elgenfritz, CEO of Community Transit. We continue to build a very strong partnership and relationship with Community Transit. I'll be in Portland this Friday for the NWPPA Executive Director interviews. Hopefully we'll have a candidate named in a couple weeks. And then traveling this coming weekend for APPA Executive Committee and Board meeting starting on Sunday. That is it. Happy to answer any questions.
You are not going to get bored.
Lots of good stuff going on.
Oh, I was reading budget. I noticed that you are now first vice president of NWPP.
First vice president.
Vice chair or whatever.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah. I got moved up a year because the current chair took a job in Missouri, which I would.
My thoughts, exactly.
Yeah. Which works out well. That way I won't be the year for NWPPA and APPA in the same year, so it actually works out well that in that regard.
You won't be.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah, I wondered about that. Okay.
Congratulations.
You know, we casually
there. You get it.
Yeah. We casually mentioned president of a regional.
I know.
One of the top regional associations, and by the way, national.
Yeah.
This should be a good practice run.
Yeah, fun stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Right, okay. Okay, thank you for your report. Commissioner reports. Commissioner Olson, do you have any reports?
I have no reports.
Commissioner Lupin, do you have any reports?
I do not.
I don't either. I have something, I think it relates to the commissioner event calendar. So I'll just ask now, Commissioner Olson, do you have any changes to the commissioner?
No, as it relates to me, no.
Okay, good. Commissioner Walker, do you have any changes?
I don't know.
The only change that I would like to mention is that, what is the date? On the 26th of October, there's going to be a meeting of the Energy Northwest. They're going to have a public power forum.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have a luncheon and then the public power forum. And the president of Energy Northwest, at my last attendance, when I filled in for Commissioner Logan, he urged me to come. He said, you really have to come to that. And so I said, when I was asked the question, do you want to go? I said, yes, I do. And so then they followed the wonderful staff, the commission team, arranged for my flight and overnight and then coming back the next morning. And then I received something from Energy Northwest, from the secretary, which showed that that same morning, from 8 till lunchtime, 8 until 11:30, there are a couple of other, there's the executive committee meeting, and I believe a couple, anyway, quite a bit happening before the luncheon. And I really, really, really would like to attend that. So that means, if there was a 5 a.m. flight, I would just do that. But there's nothing that would get me there in time for the 8 a.m. meeting. So I'm asking for approval to go the night before. So I'll be there bright and early at 8 o'clock for the executive meetings and the luncheon and the, and then, so I get the whole program that day, so.
Yeah, it seems since you're going to be there for the public power forum, you might as well.
Well, thank you. I'm really interested in what's happening with Energy Northwest, and so I appreciate that. So,
well, Commissioner Logan, you are also.
I am going to the board meeting, and I think there's a ERB meeting also.
And you have a couple of days before that that you'll be there too, right? I think I looked at.
I think I'm spending 2 nights.
Right, okay. So, we'll find out, Allison, when you handle it, we'll talk about the scheduling. Okay. I really wish I could just go down that morning, but there's no flight.
Well, there's very few.
In the early.
To the tryout meeting.
Yeah. I mean, nothing, there's nothing. On Alaska, and apparently we're limited to Alaska, so. So there would be that. And other than that, do we have any other changes to the calendar?
I missed one, but.
We have a lot to do before the end of the year. All right, so now we'll move on to the Treasury budget forecast and major project status report for August. Sarah Bond is available to answer questions regarding the report. Mr. Olson, do you have any questions or comments?
No, just going through it. I don't see anything that's coming in. I don't have anything I highlighted, so.
Okay.
You know, the only thing I noted is looking at our electrical system budget, our net income, it's down about $24 million based on our purchase of power purchases. But I notice our CapEx is down 21, so. It seems like that sort of balances out to some extent. So that was just a comment I was going to make.
I have no questions or comments. Are there any other questions or comments from you, commissioners?
No.
Okay.
The appreciation of this report.
Yes, yes. Good work. Governance planning. I will move on to the governance planning calendar. Commissioner Olson, do you have any changes to the calendar?
A lot of stuff moving around. I have no notes. Oh, wait a minute. It starts, I guess, another carbon solutions rate change. Can somebody help me with that one?
Is that a rec?
Is that a rec? Okay, all right. All right, thank you.
You know, because I used to buy.
Rents I get. But what is that?
I might have been the only customer for all I know. I don't really know if it's very popular.
Okay, so is there any further business to come before?
Commissioner Logan, did you have any changes to the planning calendar?
No.
Oh, I was, yes. I was,
oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Let's back up.
I was hoping we could remove the battery project briefing to the following meeting.
November 7th.
Oh, okay.
And there is room for that.
Yeah, okay. I don't know anything about the Beverly Station easement, but it's in the budget. Set it up.
Maureen just left, so I think our resource. Just
anyway, they're going to get an easement, so I think it's clear.
Sure.
All right. So, any further changes to the calendar?
have none.
I agree.
Okay. Is there any further business to come before the board? Only once, going twice. Hearing none, it is 3:09, and the meeting is now adjourned. Thank you all for coming.